Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest episode of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is my employer, mentor, and boss, and friend, I suppose, Jared Kimber. You can find him absolutely everywhere. Yeah, I suppose.
Last one's debatable.
Yeah, kind of stretching it over there, right? Anyway, before we start discussing what needs to be discussed, I'd just like everyone to know that all of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon, and you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast, and that way you can become one of our Patreon supporters, enjoy ad-free content, talk to us exclusively, and yeah, give us podcast recommendations as well.
One of us. You probably don't know what that movie is, do you?
No, but I do know the USA. USA, Chad. So
one of us is from a 1920s film called Freaks, which is one of the most exploitative but also hypnotic films you will ever see.
That's an interesting note to start this podcast. the title of this episode of the Footmarks podcast is Upsetting Tests. And Jared, I don't know if you recall, but before New Zealand won 3-0 in India, we did a quick fix on the greatest upsets in test history. Do you recall that?
No, okay. Not at all.
Well, we did that.
Was that series or was that test matches?
That was series. It was test series. And remarkably, after we had created all this content on how India are invincible at home and they're going to smash New Zealand 3-0, right after that that quick picks, well, New Zealand smash India 3-0 in their own backyard. So I want to kind of start with there. Is it safe to say, like, you know, if you ask like 100 people, you know, majority would kind of come to the consensus that New Zealand smashing India 3-0 in their own backyard with a team which wasn't set up to win in India without the services of Kane Williamson is probably the biggest upset we've had in Test cricket history.
Yeah, but you just did a podcast where there was a question asked of whether Imran Khan or Wasim Akram was a better cricketer. Like, people have a 5-minute memory, right? Like, it's just, you know, that's just not a question, right? Imran Khan is one of the five greatest cricketers who ever lived. And Wasim Akram is maybe in the top 20, right? Yeah. Like, and, you know, maybe in the top 10 even just, or top 15. It's just not a question, but people don't have the memory. They can't go back and they can't do that. And so you end up in a situation where you only remember what happened in the last 12 seconds. And so, I would assume most people would think that New Zealand team hadn't been number one in the world hadn't won the World Test Championship that far removed, right? I know they didn't have Williamson and Taylor and Watling and some other players.
Yeah.
Or Bolt, right? But it wasn't far removed from a team that was the best in the world. That's very different than some of the other upsets when we look at them. And I still get it. I'm not saying that isn't one of the biggest upsets of all time, because it was still listed in my order, right? Like, it's still there.
You also ranked it number one. But let's talk about the rankings, because you come up with these four metrics, right? Which is, five if you really break it down. The team strengths for both opposition team and underdog. Then you've got wow, which is literally just the wow factor. And New Zealand beating India at home or in India's home is very, very wow. Impact in terms of what sort of, you know, changes happened in cricket or, you know, disruptive points happened beyond that. And then, of course, you've got the result, the scoreline, which does tell you a lot, right? So I suppose that New Zealand, in a series where no one was giving them a shot and India were already dreaming about the World Test Championship final, them not just winning a test, because that would have been remarkable, right?
Yeah.
Just a solitary test win. They won 3-0. How do you top that? I feel like, I know this is a very weird point to start because we have all these other upsets to talk about, but I feel like this should not be subjective. This is like very, very objective, that's got to be right up there with one of the best upsets of all time.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's on the list, right? The 3-0, the fact that New Zealand had never won more than a test in New Zealand in India before. They never won a series, obviously, in India before. I know they'd won in Pakistan, and certainly have played some really good cricket in Pakistan and Sri Lanka at times. But they hadn't won a series in India. India was such a good team. But I think the 3-0 is a big part of it. I do think we have to get used to more extreme sorts of results because we're going to have more wins now.
Yeah.
Right. So what you used to get in the old days was a lot of close test series where actually nothing happened. Right.
True.
Now you're probably going to get a lot more 3-0s and a lot more, you know, 3-2s and 2-2s and all those sorts of scores, which you used to get back 150 years ago, but you don't get as much now in modern cricket. So you didn't get as much. And now for a long period until we got to this new era.
Yeah.
So we have to factor that in, that there's probably a little bit there. But yeah, I do think it's a remarkable one, because you know, I think we looked at the odds around the time, and I think me and Rob Barron were trying to work it out. Like, it's probably less likely that New Zealand beat India 3-0 in India than Leicester winning the championship, right? And that was seen as one of the biggest upsets of all time. But realistically, purely from an odds perspective, I think New Zealand were much bigger outsiders to win that series 3-0 than anything else. So it is, the result is a big part of it, I think. You can't take that away.
I know you can't escape that. And of course, we have to kind of understand that the nature of the beast, which, you know, is with the World Test Championship, is that result-oriented cricket has now become the norm. Yeah. And so you're going to see a lot more results. But, you know, had we delayed that Crick Picks podcast, this was surely number one pick, and it would have been a boring number one pick at that. But 5,000-1 were Leicester's odds to win the Premier League, because that's 38 games and you are an underdog. You recently only, you know, kind of got promoted to the Premier League. So that's a remarkable feat. Maybe we should do all-time sporting upsets someday when we have branched out and scaled up. But so let's put that to the side. Let's talk about the rest. And there were two series that I thought of which you missed in your table, right? Mm-hmm. One is one of your first picks, or perhaps your first pick in the Crick Picks, which was Sri Lanka winning in New Zealand in 93-94. How about that?
Yeah, I don't know why that one's not on my list on this one. Was it Sri Lanka 93-94?
Yep.
I mean, it's a remarkable series for many different reasons. I'm just trying to bring it back up here. I can't even find it now. I think it's a remarkable series, but I kind of remember that more as a Aravinda de Silva series than anything else. But also, New Zealand were pretty shit then, man. Mm. I'd have to go back and do a good look. I don't see 93-94 here, though, so
might
I can't remember what year it was.
94-95 or 92-93. It's in the early 90s. You are remembering the correct series. It is the Aravinda series.
Yeah. I think looking back on it, I think it came up in my draft. Remember with Crick Picks, I probably spent 12 seconds.
Yeah.
And I did spend a lot longer on this one. But yeah, I think my memory of it when it came up in my draft was just, so not my draft, in my research this time, was more to do with the fact that they didn't, where is it here? The New Zealand team was really, really poor. So I'm just trying to find, was it 1991? Is that the one?
Perhaps, yeah.
So that New Zealand team has Willie Watson, Danny Morrison, Chris Pringle, Grant Bradburn, Ken Rutherford, Andrew Jones, Trevor Franklin. It's got John Wright, Martin Crowe, and Danny Morrison. And maybe Ian Smith you would throw in as world-class players. Just off the top of my head, unless I've got the wrong series just looking at it now. So there is an element there of that was one of the things I was looking at. And perhaps when we did the Crick Picks all that way back, I wasn't always weighing in the opposition. It's still a big upset. I don't think it doesn't deserve some looking at. But yeah, I do think of actually come to think of it, I looked at it and then disregarded it quite quickly this time. So, you know, I was a bit more thorough with this one than I was with Crick Picks.
Fair enough. And just before we get into the other series, how do you feel about Bangladesh sweeping Pakistan 2-0 in their own backyard? That's fairly recent.
I just thought Pakistan was shit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Was that an upset?
Well, if you look at it by team strength, then perhaps you're right. It wasn't. But then Bangladesh had never won a single or solitary test match versus Pakistan ever.
I get that. And I also know that historically it's a really important thing. I think I picked that series to be 1-1 coming in. And Bangladesh won an extra test.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. We'd have to go back and have a look at my notes. Maybe even I said 1-0 or whatever, but I don't know. I just felt that at that stage, by the time the series was happening, I felt like Bangladesh was a better team than Pakistan at that stage. So I'm not saying it's not an upset because you're right. And I think the 2-0 of it comes in. Hmm. But I don't think I'd put that on my list.
Yeah.
Would you?
I mean, it is an interesting one, right? Because Pakistan were terrible and they couldn't find out a way or method to win test matches at home. And that had been going on for a while. This time they experiment with creating seam bowler friendly surfaces, which doesn't work out as well for Pakistan as much as it does for Nahid Rana, right? Yeah. And so I just feel like when it comes to impact, that one will be felt for long. But then there's the point where whether it's an upset or not. So perhaps, you know, I just wanted to get that out of the way because let's go. way back to the
start. Just before we do, I was just looking, I just had to find the actual scorecard because I realized I was looking at the wrong series for New Zealand before. So New Zealand, this is 94-95 you said, wasn't it? Yeah, 94-95, you're okay. Right.
There you go.
So Brian Young and Darren Murray opened the batting. Uh-huh. Right? I'm going to assume you haven't heard of either of those players.
Nope.
You got Mark Greatbatch and Stephen Fleming after that, so two good quality players. You then got Ken Rutherford and Shane Thompson, very struggling international players. Anna Parore, good player. Gavin Larson probably shouldn't be in the bowling attack. Dion Nash, a decent player. Danny Morrison, a decent player. And then someone called Kerry Walmsley. This was a really outlier bad New Zealand team after 1980, or after 1979, whenever you want to say start, they get good. That period, they really, really struggled. So I'm pretty happy, all things considered. I think you can still put it on the board because no one was expecting Sri Lanka to be very good. But if you go back and look at New Zealand in that point, it was really, really bad. So I would almost put both of those series on a similar thing. There is an upset element. There is a slight surprise part of it. But there's also, when you look back, these are comically poor teams at the time that they were going up against. You know, the favorite being New Zealand and Pakistan in those series was comically poor.
Yeah, no, I think that checks out. Let's dial it all the way back to the first ever proper test series that we consider a test series. Let's go to 1882, the birth of the Ashes. And we all know how a lot of English players at that point, including W.G. Grace, would prefer amateur cricket because it paid well. And, you know, no one took Australia seriously in the sense that they weren't even an independent nation yet. And second, third string English teams would kind of, you know, line up to face them. Then there's that test, which, of course, Australia win. And W.G. Grace, who is looked upon or considered as the god of cricket, up against the demon in Fred Spofforth. So there's that context. And again, no one's really giving Australia a shot. Then that thing happens, right? Where W.G. Grace cheats and he runs out Sammy Jones.
Didn't cheat.
Yeah, of course. We have to get that correct because he was gardening,
He pulled an Alex Carey. Yeah. Sam Jones left his crease while the ball was live. He was correctly run out.
Yep. So he correctly runs out Sam Jones, who was out
in an Alex Carey, Johnny Bairstow way.
Absolutely. And that pisses Fred Spofforth off. And he, weirdly enough, even though he has the nickname Demon, he goes and, you know, starts quoting the Bible and how, you know, God will not forgive England. And then he runs riot. And that's how the Ashes are born. And the impact is massive because we're still talking about it. It's been, nearly 150 years or 143 years or something. And it's still, you know, come up here fairly quickly. And then the wow factor, that would be the wow factor. The impact would be that the Ashes are born through it, right?
Exactly.
International cricket starts. I feel like whilst, of course, you know, a lot of time has passed, I think that has to be really high up in there. And I feel like you kind of maybe put it a bit low.
It's a one test. I don't know if they were a better team or they got away. And did you look at the scores in that test?
Yeah, they're low.
It's a really low scoring game. And I kind of feel that if you have a low scoring game, you're always a chance of an upset, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? Like just, it's hard to beat. If the opposition scores 400 and you're the worst team, it's hard to beat them, right? Like it just is. If the opposition scores 150 or whatever it was that England was scoring in those games, you're a chance. And essentially, if you go back, it's three incredible outlier performances that win the game for Australia after they were struggling. Yeah. I think it's Hugh Bonner, I want to say, comes in and just smashes the ball in a way that people did not play back then. Like it would be considered an attacking innings now, I think, the way that Bonner played. I think it was Hugh Bonner, the opening batter. And then Spofforth and Boyle, which was the strength of their team, of course, as well. You know, their incredible fast bowling duo was definitely the strength of their team. That's why I worried about it a little bit. If there was another test and there was a draw and we could see good form, I'd be like, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable putting it higher. But you're right, it's an incredibly important one. I almost didn't put it in just because it was one test. And then I was like, no, this is what changed. Essentially, as you said before, it burst the Ashes, but also it burst international cricket.
True.
Because from that point forward, everyone realizes, oh, wait, there's more on this. This matters. And, you know, Grace had been playing fast and loose with the ethics of cricket all the way through. It was only really when he does that to Spofforth that I think everyone started to go, oh, wait, this might be bigger than county cricket somehow, in a way. And that had never even occurred to English people before. So it's an incredibly important one. But yeah, because of the low scoring sort of spasmodic way in which they won that game, I just felt that I couldn't give it too many high points.
Let's fast forward 123 years to another Ashes series, of course.
Did you just add that up in your head or is that in your notes?
No, I'm just good at this stuff, man. My notes are none. Like, they're just score lines. That's all my notes are, right? England haven't won an Ashes series since 1987. They get routinely massacred by Australia, home and away, and to the point where Test cricket is pretty much dead as far as fanfare is concerned in England. Arrive Australia.
I wouldn't say it was dead.
I mean, it was. It needed some rejuvenation.
And what? Yeah, certainly that. Yeah. Agreed. After 2000, I mean, it had 2005 as well.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So they had that, and then but then there was another drop off straight after that.
True, but at that point, you know, not enough people or anyone, in fact, is giving England a shot. Australia are coming in with arguably what has been one of their best teams ever. And sure, you know, McGrath is injured and everything, but that continues to be one of the most talked about series, you know, till date. Even though it's been 20 years, we're always like kind of quoting back to it. Very, very close games, right? Freddie Flintoff, KP, like Shane Warne, so many stories coming out. Simon Jones in reverse swing, all of that fun stuff. Scorelines 2-1 though, and Australia were at a bit of a handicap after losing McGrath. I feel like the wow factor is a lot because England hadn't won for so long in the Ashes. But would you really quantify this as an upset? Because I'm a little like wary.
I still think Australia was a much better team. There's nothing. I've got a lot of friends who played in that other team and they get angry when like Army and I still argue almost every time it comes up where I was just like, yeah, but If McGrath was fit, you still would have lost the series. And he's like, no, I don't. And he'll go through the cricket reasons why he doesn't believe that, which I disagree with, but I understand his reasoning on it. I just think Australia was a much better team who somehow England came up with this incredible game plan and a bunch of ways to just upset them. I think if you played that series 20 times, I'm not sure how many times England would win that series. And I say that to this day. Like, so the fact that they won that series, I think, is quite remarkable. Whereas to go back to the first test that you talked about before, Australia in versus England, I think Australia probably win that 3 or 4 times out of 20, considering that. So I've always maintained that Australia was a much better side and that England just prepared and thought about it much better. And then the McGrath thing helps. And maybe they don't win if it's not for McGrath, but maybe McGrath's ankle gave us one of the greatest series of all time. So maybe there should be like a plaster cast of McGrath's ankle in the Lord's Museum.
I'm still trying to process you saying England prepared really well for that series and thought about it also like superiorly, because like that's England's issue right now. And I mean, this whole cycle of the Ashes has probably harmed England more than it's benefited them.
But I think it was actually that period of cricket, they were thinking much better. And Australia weren't ready for what happened in the, they weren't ready for the reverse swing. And it wasn't like reverse swing had been invented in 05, right?
Yeah.
If you read Australian journalists of that period, it was like it had been. But realistically, England had just worked out how to do it better. I think they planned for every batter really in a smart way. Michael Vaughan was willing to put fielders out on the boundary in a way that upset Australia's rhythm that we didn't even expect to see, right? There were just lots of little things that I thought that they had done correctly there. And I know it was a good little period of English cricket, but I don't think they were like, if this was the greatest team in the world, they really shouldn't have beaten them, right? Like, I just don't know if that series gets played back a bunch of times if Australia doesn't just win it. So I still think it's an incredible one. But also impact, it did change what was going on with English cricket. Even if there was a bit of a drop off after it, I think it did change things a lot. And I think England started to be more, I think England was like, oh, wait a minute, we're being beaten by all these teams, but if we prepare and think and play cricket correctly, we can do okay. So maybe 05 is a bit of a flare-up, or I think 03, 04, 05 is a bit of a flare-up, but it leads to, 09 to 2013, right, where they become number one in the world again, right? Yeah. And it leads to what we have now. Even the baseball stuff might be a bit nonsensical. At least now they come up with theories and try things and whatever. That wasn't happening in the 80s and 90s, right? They were just a mess.
Yeah, plus, you know, if you think about it, Australia still haven't won a test series in England since then or since before then, right? And if we do replay that series 20 times, how many times is Warnie dismissing Strauss?
Every single time.
Yeah. All the wickets. Anyway, that's both the Ashes series out of the way, and it's time for a short break. You guys are watching Footmarks with Jared and Behram, and go nowhere because we will be back in like half a minute.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You're with Jared and Behram, and we're talking about the greatest upsets in Test cricket history. And by the way, I forgot to ask, does South Africa defeating India 2-0 in India qualify? Because this is a weak Indian team, and we had already seen New Zealand.
I think I did the piece before it, right? Maybe I would have put it on. Again, I like the 2-0. I do like the extra wins. I think, especially away from home, I really like the extra wins on that. I mean, South Africa was a World Test champion at that point.
Yeah.
I think before the series, before the World Test Championship started, I probably had India penciled in 2-0, would be my guess. You'd have to go check my old videos, but I think I would have had it penciled in 2-0. I think closer to the series, I might have had it 1-1. And looked at it from that perspective. So I think it's an upset, but I don't think it's one of the greatest upsets of all time.
Yeah, plus in the second test match, South Africa absolutely hammer India, right? So if it was perhaps a more closely fought second test, maybe we could have made that claim, but right now...
I like the hammering. I think the hammering is part of the upset, isn't it? Because I think you can argue that they didn't just win, they smashed them, right? Which is also the case with New Zealand as well. So I'm okay with that. The closer matches sometimes can go either way, and we go only by the result. Like, a perfect example is this current Ashes, right? Australia's 2-0 up. It's the end of baseball. It's the end of England. Everything's got to change. Whereas actually, England have had plenty of chances in these games to win these test matches, or at least even make them closer, right? But at the end of the day, the result is 2-0 and Australia have won the matches easily. We don't always go back historically through and think about these sorts of things, right?
Yeah, well, the way we time these videos, you never know, England might win the Ashes 3-2 now. And then this is redundant, right? Anyway, also, Jared, Bradman's team coming back from 2-0 down to win it 3-2. There's that one.
But that's the best comeback, isn't it? That's not the biggest surprise. True. I don't think the surprise there was that they were down 2-0 and they had Bradman in their side.
Talk to me about Argentina tying a series 1-1 with the MCC in 37-38, because I had zero knowledge of this.
Yeah, I think that's something that we need to talk about a lot more, which is that we still don't know. I forget his name now. I've got his book here somewhere. But he did a history of the ICC recently, and we still don't know really why we ended up with New Zealand, West Indies, and India as test nations in the late 1920s. Like, it's kind of a bit of an accident, and there's no paper trail that sort of says why exactly anyone had picked these sides and how they went about. But the truth is that Argentina was right there, and I would argue was a better team than New Zealand at times in that era. And so I really wanted to talk about the fact that if they had become a test nation, that would have been the origin story, right? Yeah. It would have been that, how well they played against the MCC. And remember, those MCC touring teams were legit. Like, I went back and had a look. They were proper players in them, right? They were better. Those MCC touring teams were better than a lot of the teams that South Africa played in test cricket, right?
Yeah.
And so if you get a 1-1 result there, I think that's incredible. Now, it's not a win and it's not test cricket, but it's only not test cricket because... we didn't give them test status. Realistically, that would have been a test series. It could have been done retroactively, which we did quite a lot with test series back in those days. And it would, I think, again, it's incredible to think that Argentina was so good at cricket at that point that they could, go up against a really strong MCC team and take them on and beat them. I think it really should be remembered as a huge missed opportunity. Argentina pretty good at rugby and football, I hear, which are the other two English exports that they had. Cricket just shoots itself in the foot by not getting into Argentina. And now it's trying to get back there.
Yeah, the USA was also quite prominent back in the day with Bart King and everyone. So I feel like there was a bit of a Commonwealth bias over here. But hypothetical situation, Argentina defeat the MCC by a margin of 2-0. Do they get test status then?
I think the issue is, I'd have to go back and check the dates. You might have it in front of you. But I think the issue is, it was probably too close to when they just let the other three teams in.
Mm, fair enough.
I think they probably realized afterwards they'd made a mistake. But again, they're not sitting there like really. We are thinking about this more than the ICC did. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not like reading results going, oh, did you see Malaysia did really well against the MCC here? They almost beat them in this game. You know, oh, look at Argentina. They've won games against the MCC on two different tours, because I think it was twice, but the other one was 1-1, I think. But I think they had success against them another time as well. It might not have been a first-class game the other one. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and check. But I don't think anyone was doing that. But realistically, they probably in the 1930s should have been given test status. The issue really is that after World War II, there's a regression in their cricket. And so when Pakistan get test status, Canada almost get test status at the same time.
Yeah.
And if you were really being smart, what you would have done is give Canada, Sri Lanka, Pakistan and Argentina test status in the 1950s. But they'd already done three teams once. They were burned by that, Bayram, and it wasn't going to happen again, apparently.
Yeah, imagine if Leo Messi as a young child in a, you know, bustling ecosystem of cricket picked up the sport and he would have never played football. But
try and beat him off the pads, man.
Yeah, would have been a great leg glancer, I suppose. A wristy flicker of the ball. Anyway, we've got two Sri Lanka wins, or you have them in your list. One is, of course, Sri Lanka winning their first test series in England in 2014, 1-0, a dramatic series as well. First test match was drawn in quite a fashion. And then, you know, they win the second. But I feel that was a very strong Sri Lankan team. I feel like they weren't underdogs per se in that series. For me, Sri Lanka winning in South Africa in 2018-19, that two by a margin of 2-0, is one of the biggest upsets of all time. I know the global warming happened and Sri Lanka spinners, you know, did a lot of the damage, but there's the Kusal Janet Pereira innings. And then they also kind of smashed South Africa after, right? So I think that probably for me, at least in my lifetime, was one of the major surprises. And I rate KJP's 100 really highly as well. You know, so what do you think? Like, surely the South Africa win or the win in South Africa is greater than the win in England.
I think there's a bit of arse in the one in South Africa. And by that, I mean, not that they didn't play brilliant cricket, but Kusal hit 100 balls up straight up in the air. One of them could have been caught, or the number 11 could have been out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas if you go back to the other one, they were so far out of that other game and they fought back with bat and ball to win that other series. And then they fought on to hold on for a draw. I think by the time I know what you're saying about the team. The test series before the 2014 test series, it was probably one of the first ones I ever covered. And there was a game that was absolutely going to be a draw. Let me tell you how much this game was going to be a draw, Bayram. I turned up for day five of this game and bumped into Jonathan Trott in the coffee line outside in the vans outside. There were no fans in the ground. So the England players were like, well, let's go get proper coffee. What are we worried about here? So they all stopped to get proper coffee because there was no one in the ground because everyone expected it to rain all day. And then this is my memory of this game, but Sri Lanka were bowled out in 20 minutes, right? When it came out. I was going to say the Rose Bowl. It wasn't the Rose Bowl. It was Cardiff.
Okay.
Right? And I still remember that really, really clearly. And that, as I believe, is the series before they win in 2014. Right? So I think that is playing a part of it. The second one is that in that series, they played two of the great escapes of all time. They should have lost the Lord's Test and they just refused to lose it.
Yeah.
Right? And then in the next one, they were, I don't know how many runs they were down in the first innings, but they were so far behind in that game. They were like, I think when, you might be able to bring the scorecard up, but when Angelo Matthews and Rangana Harath start batting together in that game, it's Headingley. Of course, it's always Headingley when these things happen, isn't it? 2014 test. Let me just see if I can bring it up as well. I'll see if I can find this. So in the first innings, Sri Lanka are bowled out for 257 and England are in reply. Right?
Yep.
In reply, they lose their third wicket at 278.
Yep.
Right? They fought back with the ball to make sure that England only made 365, which was, I thought actually Sri Lanka bowled all pretty well all the way through. They just couldn't get Sam Robson out. But I thought they bowled pretty well for good chunks of that. And then They're what, 100 and how many runs behind? 257. So yeah, over 100 runs behind. And they fall to, so again, they get themselves back in the game. And then in the next, and then when they're batting, they fall to 277 for seven, right?
Uh-huh.
So they're not really putting on any total that's going to do anything. And they go from 277 for eight, I should, yeah, no, for seven, to 457.
Nice.
So they have fought back twice in that game.
Hmm.
And they fought back in the other game at Lord's. I think in the next game, and also the other thing I would add is that they have had this win in England in 2014 when they get to South Africa for the other win, which is only, what, 3 or 4 years after?
Yeah, but they lose a lot of stars in between, right?
They do lose some stars in between, but it isn't necessarily the stars that win them those games in the other game. So if you have a look, it was Dumika Prasad who takes the 5-wicket haul that wins them the game. I know Harath got a couple of wickets,
yeah,
but not all that much. Angelo Matthews is available for both of those games,
hmm,
right? So I think, you know, and the other bowler was Aranga, right?
Yeah.
And you know, so it wasn't really the stars that did it again. I get your point. You look at that team, and it has Kumar and Mahela in it.
Yeah. And I'm not peak Angelo, right? This is the time where we think Angelo might really become an all-time great.
This is when, it sounds bizarre now, but this is when we were like, is Angelo going to join the Fab Four?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was ridiculous. I don't know. There's something about the fact that they had to fight back so many times in that series. Whereas if you go to the next one, they have one incredible partnership. And we'll give them, it was a fight back. But also, there's just no way of getting around it, Bayram, that a 10th wicket partnership is ass, right? It just is, right? There's no way around that. Like, I love them. Obviously, the Ben Stokes one was ass. This one was ass. The Jeff Thompson, Alan Border one was ass. They're all ass, right? Because you got number 11 out there and you're 1 wicket away from losing, right? And then, you know, and then in the next test, they kind of demoralized South Africa. So I really like that series. I think both of them deserve to be there. Mm. But there's something about that 2014 one that I think is a little bit slept on, all things considered. And, you know, I watched both of those series. I felt like the more surprising one to me was probably the other one. But, you know, you could change your order around.
Yeah.
You could even add the New Zealand one in as well. Like, there might be some Sri Lankans that would be like, yeah, it was a shit New Zealand side, but fucking we didn't expect to win, you know, we didn't expect to win a test, let alone a series.
Yeah, like, for me, I get what you're saying, and that checks out. But, like, you know, a lot of teams, or all Asian teams other than Bangladesh and Afghanistan in test cricket, have won test series in England, whereas none of them have won a test series in South Africa, which Sri Lanka have managed. So there is that element.
Okay. I 100% agree with you, except for the fact that they won it with spin.
Yeah.
If they win that with seam, I think I would flip it straight away.
It's
the fact that they won it with spin, yeah, is different, because if Pakistan, a good Pakistan Indian teams turned up with those wickets, I think South Africa would have lost the series before that.
And it's not just winning those test matches via spin, it's with Lasit Embuldenia. We haven't seen the bloke in the longest time, right?
I still don't know what happened to him. He could bowl, man. Yeah. We need Estelle to come on and tell us what happened there.
Yep. Okay, so there's another first-time series win in England over here. You ranked it quite highly. This 2014 one was the first time Sri Lanka won a test series in England. Let's go back to 1971, where India, for the very first time, defeat England in England. India also win that series by spin, which is a feat in England. But the scoreline's 1-0, so result isn't massive. I think you end up rating that one, or ranking that one, at number 3. So explain your rationale over there.
I didn't think I had it at 3, did I?
I think you might have had it at 3.
I mean, partly because it changes cricket forever.
Is it because of the elephants? Don't lie to me.
It's partly because of the elephants. It changes cricket forever, right? Cricket was a major sport in India, but hockey was still huge and they were winning everything in hockey. I think emotionally and morally, you know, they played that series in theaters for years after.
Yeah.
Right? You could go in the theater and just watch the highlights of that series. I think it's really why It's in the same way that the Ashes series is really important, the Spofforth one that we talked about before. This is where it all starts. The 83 World Cup is the moment that Indian fans can see it, right? So the 83 World Cup has more impact. The 83 World Cup probably doesn't happen without this series. And I think it's such an important one in the history of that. Also, I've done a lot of history on this.
You've written a book on this, dude.
Yeah. It's really important to know how much England fans weren't even watching this series. They were just like, this team's not very good. We don't rate them. We're not interested. It was like the steam was going out of that series as much as anything. And the fact that we're still talking about it now tells you how important, how big a moment that was. And, you know, in some ways, it's a very similar to the 83 World Cup. I think they were slightly, they played better cricket all the way through the 83 World Cup than perhaps they did in this series. But it's very similar to the 83 World Cup in that you just think eventually they're not going to win it, right? They're not going to win that game. Even when they have that great day and a half, 2 days that bring it back into their favor, it's a bit like when they play in 83 and you look at the West Indies and you're like, yeah, well, someone from the West Indies is going to make runs though, right? Like someone's going to, it's not a big total and it just doesn't happen. But the impact that we have had on our sport, I think is huge. And a lot of people will say, oh, they played really well in the West Indies beforehand. And I was really interested in that. I went back. That was a very weak West Indies side. Yeah. I think if that was a stronger West Indies side, I would have downplayed them a little bit more. But that was the one thing I'd never really done research on before. So from an upset point of view and from an importance point of view, I think this was absolutely huge. You know, people just didn't expect India to win games in England in the 70s with a bunch of spinners.
You've brought up the West Indies, of course, and they lost, a very good West Indian team lost to New Zealand in 79-80, right? And that series is more known for Michael Holding breaking the stumps in anguish and being pissed
Colin
off.
Croft hitting an umpire.
Yeah, being pissed off at umpires, all of that stuff. You can watch clips of it in Fire in Babylon. There's definitely, yeah, you know, that bit over there. I just feel like if you talk about this Indian win in England and compare it to the New Zealand win in the West Indies, umpiring howlers aside, you look at the strength of opposition teams. Wouldn't you say that West Indian team is stronger than the English team and the New Zealand team is weaker than the Indian one?
Yes, but it didn't have any impact on the game.
Yeah. Apart from that, right? Scene in Fire in Babylon.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? I mean, it should. You also have to factor in, this is me and Varun are desperate to do this piece at one stage, of how many great West Indians are shit in New Zealand. They smash England everywhere and they go to New Zealand, don't make any runs. But there is a pattern of West Indian players struggling in New Zealand for whatever reason. They were going up against the greatest bowler in the world at that point, right? One of the greatest, still probably one of the greatest bowlers, top five, top 10 bowlers of all time, who was, the umpiring did play a part. Also, the West Indies give up.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. They gave up in that series at times. And, you know, even Richard Hadlee, who's a pretty arrogant person, even he's like, you know, when he talks about that 100, he's pretty honest in going, I'm not sure they were trying all that hard at that point. So I came into it rating, if you would have asked me beforehand, the reason I did the video was because I wondered if New Zealand had done the two greatest upsets of all time.
Yeah.
That's why I started the video. The more I thought about this series, that something wasn't quite right. They hadn't actually fully assembled the West Indies yet either. They didn't have a history of winning lots of series at that point.
Yeah.
If it happens 2 years later, I'd be there. But it's at the wrong time.
It's ever Test series win for New Zealand, isn't it? They'd only defeated
Pakistan
prior.
Yeah. You could also make a claim that the Test series they beat Pakistan is right up there as well. Like, you know, winning that series as well is definitely a big part of it. But yeah, I think it's great to go back and have a look at it. But I don't know if I have it as high as I did before I did all the research on all the different teams.
And also, of course, you know, speaking of the West Indies, they pulled off an upset, defeating England in 1934-35. From what I recall, though, from that chapter in Overthrowing Cricket's Empire, which is my favorite chapter of the book, that English team wasn't a strong one and there were two English teams playing Test cricket simultaneously. Correct me if I'm wrong. That was happening at that
point. I can't remember if that was that series. Was that the series before? But yeah, around that period. No, you're right. A lot of players, weirdly now, everyone wants to go on Caribbean tours. It wasn't seen as a glamorous thing.
Yeah.
In those days, maybe the results weren't as nice. I don't know what the idea was there. But
The scoreline is 2-1. It's the Leary-Constantine series, right? It's obviously massive for the West Indies, but like, how many people even know about it? So in terms of impact, it's fairly low. And the war comes up, right?
Yeah, and I think also just before then, England had lost at home to South Africa, who were a pretty ordinary side as well. You know, it was just England had some really good batters, but not all of them were on that series. But their bowling had dropped off quite a bit around that period. I mean, Bradman had basically ended careers, right?
Yeah.
And so they were kind of reacting to Bradman, but they were playing lesser teams who were also playing good cricket against them. So I think I downgraded a little bit based on the fact that South Africa and the West Indies had beaten them at that point, which is, you know, looking back, considering where those teams were. Also, we knew West Indies were good, I think. We didn't expect them perhaps to win that series, but we knew they were good. We knew Headley was incredible. Yeah. And obviously, Constantine was already famous. And, you know, they had a couple of other really good cricketers as well. So I think we may be surprised at how good they were, but I don't think anyone was surprised that they beat that England team at that time. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say that. There was surprise. I don't think it was like, whoa, the world is ending here.
Yeah, and even the second string English team, if that was the case in that series, would be quite good at that point, or at least highly billed, right? But I don't know, maybe there were a lot of oldies, if I can recall correctly. Maybe I'm mixing series, but something like this did happen.
It certainly, in those days, it was actually rare for, even for the Ashes, England didn't always take over their best team. Hmm. Like, you know, that was just a thing that happened in cricket at that point. You know, it was just something that we had to kind of get used to.
Yeah. Anyway, there's another big series which England lost, and I know Jared loves this one, but before we talk about it, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Footmarks with Jared and Behram, and go nowhere, because we'll be back after this very short ad break.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
To the Footmarks podcast, Jared and I, Behram, are currently discussing the greatest upsets in Test history, Test series history, might I add. And I think if I had to count the number of podcasts that we've done on South Africa's 1905-06 team, which defeated England for the very first time, I mean, I'd probably run out of fingers, because every now and then this comes about. There was a specific Footmarks on Bernard Bosanquet, and he's a big one over here because he's the English bowler who invented the googly, the wrong-un. It was called Bozy back in the day. He taught it to his mate Reggie Schwartz in county cricket, who then taught it to his other mates in South Africa, including Aubrey Faulkner. And the four spinners from South Africa who bowled googlies essentially dismantled England. This is massive for many reasons. First, of course, the ICC is birthed out of this result, right? Then you're getting a brand new delivery, which is still very, very important, even more so perhaps in T20 cricket as the formats evolve.
Yeah.
The wrong-un remains, you know, a very, very important ball. And then, of course, you think about, you know, England being so strong at that point, where South Africa weren't even thought of as a proper team. And the scoreline is 4-1, Jared. On all metrics, this is winning. There's a lot of wow factor as well. And if anyone is a regular Good Area supporter or fan or listener, you'd know about this series. That's how much we talk about it.
Yeah, it's so important in so many different ways. And it cannot be, you know, there's sometimes when you and I, you know, you're saying, but Sri Lanka came with Mahela and Kumar and whatever. And I was like, yeah, but the team wasn't rated or whatever. Hmm. It's like, you know, there no one at all in the world thought that South Africa was going to win that series.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not, it wasn't even a thought process. I think when they played the first tour game is the first time everyone goes, whoa, wait a minute, what's happening here, right? This was a delivery that was almost in secret, right? They'd seen Bosie bowl it. They'd seen a couple of other England bowlers bowl it a little bit. They thought of it more as a party trick. And then suddenly that was the case. But it wasn't just that they had this incredible secret weapon. It was because they were all batters who learnt this skill. They suddenly had this incredibly long batting lineup, right? So they win the first test, 9 wickets down. It's probably one of the few cases where I would say a 9-wicket win isn't fluky, only because they didn't have a number 11. Everyone could bat in that side. They were legitimate players. And so it came from nowhere. I think in South Africa's history at that point, their best result in a test match was a draw against Australia. Like, they were not. And they were playing Barum, they were playing shit teams. Like, I don't mean like they were playing like, like you were saying before, where, you know, Wally Hammond goes over, but not all the other players go over to play the West Indies. They were playing shit teams. There are teams that toured in South Africa where the only only first-class games they ever played were test matches against South Africa, right? Literally, like, they were sending over free, you know, just like tourists to play against South Africa, right?
It was a famous tourist spot for the English, wasn't it? Cape Town?
That was, yeah, so that was part of the whole thing. So, you know, the whole thing is just fascinating. And then they scrape by in that first test, but then they just dominate. And also, to be fair to them, it isn't just the leg spinners. By the end, they're just beating England, partly because they've got extra batting in the side, and then partly because they've got, you know, some good fast bowlers as well. Like, they're just a really good team. So it's surprising in about five different ways. It really is one of the more out there things. Now, the other side we have to say is, I did say that England didn't always send over their best teams, right? Like, there's no way to get around the fact that, you know, this was not exactly a first string team or anything like that. Just let me just quickly bring up the side. So they had Callum Warner. I mean, probably shouldn't have played. Albert Ralph, Walter Lees, a couple of good, you know, some very good first class players. But like Sydney Barnes, Jack Hobbs, you know, I can go through a list of guys they didn't have over there that would, one of those might have changed the series quite a bit. I mean, if you put Sydney Barnes in that series, who knows what happens, especially if he would have picked up the wrong one halfway through.
What was the year for this? I can't quite recall.
05, 06.
05, 06 had Jack Hobbs?
Yeah, Jack Hobbs is around. I don't know when he makes his debut. It might have been just after that. But there were heaps of good players that they could have picked. I'm trying to think when Hobbs played his first test. Was it 08? I should know that off the top of my head, but I can't remember. But the point being is, yeah, he was 08.
Yeah.
But he wasn't that far away from that team. So it's not like it was a dud English team, but they did send over a bunch of, like, you know, so, you know, Pelham Warner.
Who is
Or Plum Warner,
not, oh,
is,
yeah,
as he's known.
He is Plum Warner, isn't he? That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, so, I mean, he plays, where are we here? He plays 15 test matches and averages 24. But in first-class cricket, he makes almost 30,000 runs at an average of 36. Not a dud, obviously picked largely because he was posh, right? Yeah. But not a bad cricketer. Like, you don't make 29,000 first-class runs and make 60 hundreds if you're a bad cricketer. So this isn't like the early teams that toured South Africa where you and I would have got a game, right? This is the next step up on that. That's the thing that it's still not a top level English side. You know, some good first class bowlers, but they didn't have their best bowler available. And you have to be honest with that, right? And it is a really important series. As you said, it gives us fully fledged international cricket because we have a third side that everyone wants to play.
Yeah.
And it gives us the ICC. So it's had incredible impact. And the wrong end is still used today, right? Sure. All of those things are huge. But, you know, I reckon give me an hour against Callum Warner, I'll get him out.
Yeah, well, you said that Plum Warner wasn't a dud. Well, he wasn't a fruit either. I think that's the takeaway over here. There is one series that I feel like perhaps for some people would be ranked higher than the South Africa win versus England 4-1. I feel it's the scoreline which kind of tilts this towards South Africa, but India winning in Australia in 2020-21, that Border Gavaskar trophy, because they'd already won in Australia, you know, the last time they toured, but that series did not have Warner and Smith, and a lot of people did bring that up. India in this series, they were the team who lost players. Virat Kohli was having a child, so he's gone after 36 all out. And they were 36 all out when they lose in Adelaide. So that's a big part of it. The Rishabh Pant innings, everyone getting injured. Ashwin copping blows on his body. India fighting it out, winning the final test match with Natarajan in the team. Like, the list continues to go on and on. Chiteshwar Pujara tiring out Australia's attack, which, by the way, Australia, from what I recall, was full strength, right? I feel like the impact of this series is also immense because that rivalry, India-Australia, is looked upon as the most intense rivalry now in test cricket, at least as far as competition goes, right? Because those test matches are thoroughly entertaining. And then it kind of doubles down on the fact that India can win in Australia. It wasn't a fluke the last time. And this time we were the team which were missing players. And in that last test match, like, they barely can kind of scramble an 11, right? That's what it got to. And then winning at the Gabba. after Baines.
I think it's incredible.
Yeah.
But they were not they were not massive outsiders at the start of that series.
Yes, there's that, of course. But
right? They had won the previous series. Even if you put a caveat on it, they had won the previous series. They had lots of really good professionals around them. They were a good, solid team that had not lost a lot of cricket. Like, we knew they could tour. We knew they could play in Australia. During the series, I almost think that there's another award that you could give them rather than most surprising win. Do you know what I mean? The biggest upset. Because it's not the biggest upset, man. Hmm. We know it's not the biggest upset, right? Because we literally had just seen them win in Australia. So I think it's probably a little bit more, you would say, one of the biggest comebacks of all time. The fact that it won 1-0 down after Adelaide and all their players went away, I'd probably put that more with the Bradman series that you were talking about before. I still think it is a upset because of everything you've said, but I don't think it's that big an upset, all things considered, based on what we thought at the start of that series. If you had said that India had won, was it 2-1 they won that series?
Yes.
Yes, 2-1, isn't it? If you told me India won that series 2-1 beforehand, I would have gone, okay, didn't expect that, but fair enough. They played good cricket last time, right? So it's different, isn't it? It's not a purely an upset situation. But come back, I think, to be 1-0 down in Australia and win is almost unheard of, right? I know England have done it once and, you know, maybe there's one or two others that I can't even think of off the top of my head, but it's almost unheard of. But that's a comeback. That's not an upset.
True. I mean, Ajinkya Rahane will go down in the annals of history because of that Test series win, because he was skipper. But I do agree with you. You could call perhaps the last Test win at the Gabba an upset because India was so understaffed. Yeah. Right. And then
I still think it's an upset overall. I just think there are things that play against it. I mean, you're talking about South Africa, who'd never won a test match before, winning a series 4-1. Hmm. And then you're comparing it to a team who won the previous test series, winning 2-1. Do you know what I mean? Like, as an upset, they're very, very different kinds of upsets. And it kind of depends on how you weigh it and how you weigh the series. I still think because they lost that first test so dramatically, and because it was in Australia, and then they lost so many players, I think that you'd be silly not to say it's an upset, but it's not an upset in the way that some of these other series are.
I suppose when we look at Border Gavaskar Trophy 2020, 2021, and then you look at the 2005 Ashes, which England win, they're both 2-1 results, and sure, Australia were a far more powerful team in 2005, but those two series are perhaps remembered more, you know, fondly as some of the best cricket that we've seen, as opposed to out-and-out upsets. I feel like they've got a bit of that.
Yeah, I think they both have a huge legacy, right? Like, there's the 20... We don't get that many books written about Test series anymore. It used to be every Test series used to have a book, right?
Uh-huh.
Barat and... Was it Gav Joshi? I think it was Gav Joshi who wrote it. They wrote that book really quickly, straight after that series, because they knew, right? And they were right to... I'm not sure if I have a copy, actually. Maybe Barat sent me one. It's in my other room. But... they were right to write that book because it was a huge moment, but it wasn't just an upset. It was I think the comeback is the more interesting part of that.
Yeah. No, agreed on that front, I suppose. All right, last series to discuss. It's a weird one. Zimbabwe defeat Pakistan 1-0 in 98-99. Now, they win in Peshawar.
How do you feel about this?
I wasn't old enough to appreciate this, right? Because
But I mean now, how do you feel about it?
Like, I feel like you can't look past the fog, but you also can't look past the Flower Brothers and how Zimbabwe, you know, did, you know, handsomely win that first test match in Peshawar, if I've got my numbers right. So I feel like it's important in the sense that you look back at the late 90s Zimbabwe team and they deserve to have something next to them, right? Yeah. That we can kind of recount. And I'm just glad that they made the list because this is still a pretty big result. You still have a very, very good Pakistan team, right? You've got Waz and Waqar. Both the Ws. Did they play all these games though? That I'll have to check.
I can't remember. It was a good side though. You're right. And it was a good era of Pakistani cricket. Yeah. Like, they were a really good team at this point. I think it had to be on there because... No one, Zimbabwe had been playing good cricket. Everyone knew that. No one thought they were going to win that series though, right? It just wasn't even on anyone's radar.
Yeah, Zimbabwe won by 7 wickets that test match. Again, there's the 1-0 element of this, but then again, this is a very, very strong Pakistan team. It didn't have Wasim, or it did have Wasim. Wasim, Waqar, Aqib Javed, Mushtaq Ahmed, Azhar Mahmood. Very, very decent
taking that team.
Bowling lineup, right?
There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
So... I think that the fog does play a part. The fact that, what, 6 days of cricket were fogged out, and because of that, Pakistan never really had a chance of coming back and winning the series. There's nothing you can do about that. That's a lot of fog, right? On something like this. The Zimbabwe team was very, very good. So there's also that element of it, I think, is fair. But I just, you just didn't expect it. In some ways, it's similar to what India do to England in 70-71, in that it's a series that ultimately comes down to one game, and they win the key moments and they win that match. And, you know, I think a lot of that that India-England series had been rain-affected earlier in the series as well. So I do think there was a big part of it that I really do, that is similar. The difference is that there's no impact, because that's the end of Zimbabwean cricket, that, you know, 3 or 4 years later, and it's almost done, right? Yeah. So there's no lasting impact to Zimbabwean cricket. We're only now seeing the, you know, Zimbabwean cricket make a comeback 25, 28 years later, whenever it is, right? And so that's the difference between India's win over England and this one. There's just not that there. But I love the fact that they won that series. I think it's really cool.
I think it might have, you know, really boosted their morale going into the 99 World Cup, and Zimbabwe have a phenomenal campaign. So
they were Neil good Johnson. Team. I mean, there's no,
you know, Neil Johnson
played in that series, didn't he?
Yeah, he scored 100 in Peshawar, and then he was their main man in the 99 World Cup. But again, things kind of fall off a cliff for Zimbabwe, whereas for India, gradually it only starts to get better. So I see why, you know, you'd have that ahead of this one. Also, as we close this podcast,
can I add one that I didn't put in?
Yeah.
Because you mentioned two that I didn't before. The only other one I was going to put in, and it's not a win, but it was an upset, is New Zealand in 1948 not losing a test match in England, which changed New Zealand's future forever, because they were taken seriously as a test nation after that. And I love, did I say 48? Sorry, not 48, 49. Uh-huh. The 49ers. I wanted to put it in, but I'd already put the Argentina one in. I was like, I can't have another draw in here. So I left it out. But go back if you ever want to have a look. I think I wrote about that in the book too, didn't I? That's a really important series in world cricket, because they were the team that everyone was like, maybe we shouldn't have given them test status. And Australia barely played them. And like, there was a real thing of like, maybe we should get rid of them. And they went and England were only playing them in 3-day tests. And they basically went, you're not going to beat us in this series. We're going to go home with a draw, and that's going to change everything. And literally, they were so good at batting during that series that England offered them extra days on the test matches, but they didn't have time because they replanned for other games.
So I know that this podcast will probably, you know, be published later, but there's currently a test match going on in Wellington. West Indies aren't exactly out of it just yet. You know, what if they win that series, Jared? Because they have drawn a test match, you know, which will be remembered for quite a while. If they win this test series 1-0, I feel like that could be, you know, kind of quantified as an upset.
Oh, this would be a massive upset, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to look around that. It would be huge for them to be able to do that. And, you know, and they would have earned it, right? Because, again, this will be, do you know what it would be similar to? Is the Sri Lanka one that we talked about before, the 2014 one, where they didn't really deserve, you know, they had to fight for the draw. This isn't just that the game was drawn. It was a fight for the draw. And if they find a way to win here, it would be huge. They're behind in the game as we speak, and by the time this is out, everyone will know the result.
Yep.
But yeah, I would definitely, I would look at that. And as I said before as well, traditionally, the West Indies are not very good in New Zealand. So for whatever reason, they play really good cricket against England home and away, and they've never cracked New Zealand. So again, I think it would be a huge thing, and good luck to them. And everyone listening to this is like, why are they talking about this? This game's already over.
Yeah, well, let's see whether or not they are able to avenge the ghosts of 79-80, I suppose. It would be really, really fun if they do manage to win this. But again, this is redundant because you guys already know the result. That's a wrap for this episode of the Footmarks podcast, and hope you guys enjoyed it. So do like, share, subscribe. And just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And then again, as I said at the start, all of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon. And you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast. That way you can enjoy ad-free content, you can talk to us exclusively, and you can give us podcast recommendations. Soon enough, we'll see you on another show. For now, that is all. Have a good one, and goodbye.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.